It's a pleasure to welcome all of you to our annual university conference, and a pleasure to see you here. The past year has gone by very quickly, at least for me, and that's a very good sign. We often hear that time flies when you're having fun, and as it turns out, studies confirm that that is true. One study noted that people experience time differently depending on what they are doing and how they feel about that particular activity. Time consistently sped up when subjects were busy, happy, concentrating, or socializing, and it slowed down when subjects were bored, tired, or sad. By that measure, this past year has been a very good one. Now, in that same vein, I feel compelled as I begin my remarks to note that another time perception study found that a speech seems to go by more quickly to the person who gives it than to the person who listens to it. Just consider yourself forewarned. If I'm still happy at the end, it doesn't mean that you need to be. By other more objective measures, this past year has been a success on many fronts, and we've seen that in the presentation before. We have also seen the completion of several construction projects, including the Marriott Center Annex, another residence hall, and a new central building at the Heritage Hall complex, and the multi-year campus drive redesign project. We saw over 12,000 of our students participate in Y Serve projects during the year. And in athletics, the men's volleyball team played in the national championship game for the second year in a row. The women's volleyball team made it to the Sweet 16 for the fifth year in a row. And reflecting the overall strength of all the athletic teams, the program finished just outside the top 10% in the Director's Cup, which measures the overall performance of the nearly 300 Division I NCAA schools. We also made important strides on key academic initiatives. The BYU Online Project, whose goal is to expand the number of online offerings available to our matriculated students so that by 2020, each BYU student will be able to take at least 15 hours of credit online before graduation, is on pace. This fall semester, BYU Online will be offering 109 sections of 54 courses with a current enrollment of over 5,500 students. We made similar progress on our Inspiring Learning Initiative. We announced this initiative last fall. Its purpose is to help our students have experiences that motivate them to learn in ways that lead to revelation, thus promoting learning that is inspiring in both senses of that word. Additional funds from two different sources were provided this year to allow more students to have that kind of experience. More than $1 million was made available to the colleges and departments for inspiring learning projects as a result of reallocation of funds from the university's operating budget. In addition, generous donors have contributed $6 million for this initiative, with $1.2 million being made available for immediate student use, the rest going toward our goal of creating a $120 million endowment by the end of 2021. Let me share with you a small slice of the impact that these inspiring learning experiences have had on some of our students.
My story begins with an avocado. When the BYU competition was introduced, they told us about these small-scale farmers throughout South America that don't have the means to export fruits internationally.
So what Fertrasa does is they actually go in and they teach these farmers how to farm in a way that allows them to meet international standards.
And the CEO invited me and said, would you be willing to go down to South America this summer and implement your ideas? So my wife and I got married the very first day of finals. We took a two-day honeymoon.
And then I graduated the very next day.
And then 12 hours after she graduated, we were on a plane to Peru. We were spending our honeymoon in a sweaty banana farm.
Definitely one of the crazier things I've ever done in my life.
In the first 30 days of our internship, we lived in 13 different places. And we were interviewing farmers, writing surveys, looking through data charts.
We as humans can help one another. Though we live in faraway places and though we don't always understand the challenges that others face, there's a way for us to help.
We don't need to be in the spotlight necessarily, but we do need to be making an impact with the talents we've been blessed with.
There's a quote on campus that says, learning a language makes you worth two. Study abroad can offer a lot more than just language acquisition. The love of the people and food and culture and music even. Once a week I would go and teach refugees English. I was selected as one of the winners for the Many Languages One World competition. I got to go to New York and speak at the UN. It was a little nerve-wracking. At one point, I looked out and saw an Arabic-speaking UN worker, and he looked out and gave me a thumbs up, so that was kind of encouraging to see that. Learning Arabic gave me a great outlook on life and also helped me have empathy for another people.
Our lab has a lot of really cool innovation going on. We're taking these origami devices and we're using them for applications that people wouldn't have originally thought of.
The origami is interesting because it involves so many different mechanisms that we can't think of in other ways.
Origami can be used in space applications and medical devices and for homeland security. When I was a freshman, I got involved with freshman mentorships for women. And I worked on this origami solar array with a PhD student, Shannon. And the idea is that it would fold up and fit inside of a rocket and then deploy once it got into space. I think it's cool that you can make things that are both beautiful and peaceful. And origami is one way to do that.
The first project I came into on the lab was an origami-based ballistic or bulletproof barrier. The law enforcement officials are looking for something that's portable and quick to set up. Probably the most rewarding thing was when we just set it out there on the firing range and just hit it with 20 bullets. So it just absorbed all the bullets, didn't reflect any out.
When I was a freshman, I had a grad student mentoring me, and now I am mentoring other students. BYU does a really great job of getting undergrad students involved with research, and that helped me get the experience that I needed to go work for NASA. All the programs that I've been involved with have really expanded my view of my own potential, of what I can do and where I can go in life.
If you look back at my family tree, you'll see that it is plagued with brain disorders, ranging from mental illness to Alzheimer's.
My goal and hope is to find solutions.
There's been a gene that we have identified and has implications for Alzheimer's prevention and treatment.
Kenny is such a deserving student. He's committed to his research in Alzheimer's disease. He's committed to his education in neuroscience.
Good, I've got something for you from the ORCA office.
Really?
I want you to take a look at it.
Oh, awesome.
Well, sure. Well, like I said.
Dear Kenny Reed, the Office of Research and Creative Activities, ORCA, is pleased to inform you that you have been awarded a 2017 ORCA grant.
That's awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a blessing to be here, but it hasn't been easy, academically or financially. My family works as hard as they can, but it's not easy to provide for four boys. I think about my parents and how much they've done for me and their. And so to receive even $1,500 is really such a blessing.
There's nearly two dozen undergraduates that work in my lab. When you see the quality of students that walk into my office and that work in this lab, you can't help but be excited about what's in store for BYU and for the church and for the world.
Inspiring learning is loving what you learn.
Inspiring learning is pursuing your passion.
Inspiring learning is using your education to help others.
Inspiring learning is living what you learn.
Inspiring learning is learning to tell your story.
Inspiring learning is becoming as you learn.
Inspiring learning is realizing who I am and who I'm meant to be.
When I look at the scared, inexperienced freshman that I was and compare that to the engineer that I am now, that's inspiring learning.
Now, this video represents just a fraction of the thousands of students who have had the opportunity to participate in the kinds of experiences that are part of our Inspiring Learning Initiative. Most departments have equally powerful stories of their own. And so it has been a great year. But there is work still to be done. As our annual conference theme suggests, we gather together with our outstanding students at this university so that we may be taught more perfectly and have experience. Today, I hope to provide some insights at a general level on how we might accomplish that goal. This past April, Elder Dallin H. Oaks, who is not only a former president of the university, but currently the chair of the executive committee of the BYU Board of Trustees, addressed the leadership of the university. He began his remarks by repeating what he had said to a similar group of leaders in August 2014, shortly after I became president. I've learned to pay particular attention when prophets, seers, and revelators repeat a message. And so I have thought much about the following statement that Elder Oaks made on both occasions. I firmly believe that it is the destiny of Brigham Young University to become what those prophetic statements predicted it would become. But inherent in being the University of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the reality that this great goal will not be attained in exactly the same way that other universities have achieved their greatness. With your help, it will become the great university of the Lord, not in the world's way, but in the Lord's way. Three things are apparent in this statement. Number one, BYU has a prophetically proclaimed destiny to become a great university. Number two, we have a critical part to play in realizing that destiny. And number three, we will achieve that goal in a way that is different from that by which other universities have achieved their greatness. Elder Oaks' statement is remarkably similar to two statements made by President Spencer W. Kimball, one during his landmark second century address given while Elder Oaks was president, the other during the inauguration of President Jeffrey R. Holland. Speaking at the centennial celebration of the founding of this institution in 1976, President Kimball stated, "As previous first presidencies have said, and we say again to you, we expect, we do not simply hope, that Brigham Young University will become a leader among the great universities of the world. To that expectation, I would add, become a unique university in all of the world." At President Holland's inauguration 5 years later, President Kimball repeated the same quote almost verbatim, the only difference being that instead of saying we should become a unique university, President Kimball stated that we should remain a unique university. Note again the three critical elements. One, BYU has a prophetically declared destiny to become a great university. Two, those prophets expect, not merely hope, that we will do our part to fulfill that destiny. And three, achieving it requires that we do things differently from other universities, that we be unique. Unique is an interesting word. It means literally one of a kind. Único, we say in Spanish. Something that is unique is not just distinctive from some others. It is truly different from them all. President Kimball used the terms unique or uniqueness 8 times in his second century address. Given that repetition, as well as the renewed emphasis given the concept by Elder Oaks, I've spent considerable time thinking about how we are and how we should be unique. The latter is more important than the former. There is little point in being different for difference's sake. That will not help us achieve our prophetically declared destiny. We must be unique in the way the Lord wants us to be unique, in ways that are consistent with our board-approved, which means prophetically approved, mission. There are at least 2 key ways in which we are already distinct from most other universities. And when you put the 2 features together, I believe they make us truly unique in ways that are consistent with our prophetically approved mission. First, unlike most major private universities that started off as faith-based institutions, BYU has remained closely aligned with and is closely directed by our sponsoring church. As Elder Oaks observed last April, for many years, religiously affiliated colleges and universities have been steadily disappearing, some by formal disaffiliation and some by institutional drift. Today, they are a tiny minority without clear definitions to distinguish them from private, secular, and even public institutions. Now, many of you will be familiar with this phenomenon, which has been well chronicled. The trend toward secularization is so strong that one scholar has opined that any religious university, quote, will find it extremely difficult to maintain its religious affiliation if it also seeks to attain and preserve a national reputation, close quote. In other words, many observers today believe that religious universities like ours have a choice. We can either become secular or second rate. There is no middle ground. We resolutely believe that this is a false dichotomy. Though now clearly a minority position, that firm belief that there is a positive connection between faith and learning is shared by a number of our institutions, including our sister institutions of higher education in the church education system, BYU Idaho, BYU Hawaii, and LDS Business College. Like BYU, each of these schools is fully committed to the proposition that faith enhances rather than detracts from the acquisition and development of truth and knowledge. That commitment is built into every fiber of the institutional structure of all the CES schools, including BYU. And that commitment increasingly distinguishes us all from other universities, even some which maintain a formal religious affiliation. The second way in which we are distinct from some other universities, however, also differentiates us to a degree from the other CES institutions. While all the CES institutions of higher education share the deep common commitment to the reality of the connection between faith and education, we are the only one of the CES schools that requires, as a fundamental part of our mission, that faculty members excel not only in the classroom, but also in the research arena. Thus, while we are first and foremost committed to our students and to teaching them in the Lord's way, we also ask faculty members to reinforce and enhance that primary teaching mission with world-class research. Just as there are skeptics about the ability of a university to be both first-class and faithful, there are also some who question whether a university can maintain both a primary teaching focus and a significant research focus. A recent Deseret News editorial noted the difference between world-class research institutions like Harvard and Stanford on the one hand, and excellent universities like BYU-Idaho, whose sole focus is on teaching, on the other. The editorial recognized the need for both types of universities in modern society. However, it also noted that schools that focus primarily on research run the risk of losing sight of the well-being and education of their students. The authors then opined, quote, "The solution may be for research institutions to take on more research and teaching schools to become better at teaching. For institutions in the messy middle, schools that fall between top-tier research schools and strictly vocational colleges, leaders would do well to pause and simply ask if increased scholarly production is really worth the price to students." That observation contains echoes of the earlier noted skepticism about the compatibility of faith and greatness as a university. Just as some would assert that universities will have to choose to be either secular or second rate, some will assert that schools will have to choose to be excellent at either research or teaching, but not both. They will contend that schools in the messy middle, in these two regards, are doomed to fail. I believe that on these two issues, the compatibility of faith and learning and the compatibility of teaching and research, we at BYU are in the messy middle. We are clearly in the thinly populated middle position on these two matters because we reject both the dichotomy between faith and education as well as that between teaching and research. And our position is certainly messy in some ways as we find ourselves straddling two divides that most believe are slipping farther and farther apart. But being in this precarious position should be reason for hope and not despair. For being in the messy middle on these two issues make us unique in ways that may allow us to achieve our prophetically declared destiny. As Brené Brown observed in a different context, the middle is messy, but it is also where the magic happens. I believe that when viewed in the light of gospel truths, these two seemingly irreconcilable dichotomies become mutually reinforcing convergences, which produce a truly unique kind of education that is part of our prophetically declared destiny. Properly understood, belief in gospel truths and adherence to gospel principles can enhance the kind of learning that marks a great university. In a speech given in 1967, President Kimball noted that one of the things that makes universities great is the ability to produce great artists, writers, and scientists who in turn have a profound impact on the world. He then observed how the learning process that produces such luminaries can be enhanced at a university that understands, teaches, and practices the precepts of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. "Take a Da Vinci or a Michelangelo or a Shakespeare," he said, "and give them, number one, a total knowledge of the plan of salvation of God, and number two, personal revelation, and then take a look at the statues they will carve and the murals they will paint and the masterpieces they will produce." Because of our close connection and clear alignment with the church, we are uniquely positioned to help budding authors, artists, and scientists to understand how the plan of salvation can shed illuminating light on every subject they study. And because of our collective commitment to live in accordance with gospel principles, our students and faculty are uniquely positioned to experience the kind of revelatory learning that only the Holy Ghost can provide. Thus, faith-based teaching can produce a kind of learning that makes universities great in the truest sense, thereby providing evidence that, contrary to the assertions of some, faith enhances rather than detracts from true learning. Similarly, I believe that first-class research can enhance rather than detract from student learning and development. Elder Oaks identified the key to this belief in his remarks at the April leadership retreat. He first noted President Kimball's assertion that BYU could produce brilliant stars in drama, music, literature, sculpture, painting, science, and all the graces. Elder Oaks then quoted John Tanner's insightful observation about President Kimball's remarkable statement. "As I reread this now familiar charge," John said, "to become a refining host for brilliant stars, it struck me that President Kimball was thinking primarily about the accomplishment of BYU's students, not faculty. This fact can serve as a salutary reminder for us about the fundamental purpose of scholarship at BYU. It is not, and must never be, to satisfy our own vainglory, nor simply to advance our own careers. Nor even is it solely to advance truth and knowledge, though this is a worthy purpose and one specifically endorsed by BYU's institutional objectives. The primary purpose for the church's large investment in faculty scholarship and creative work at BYU is to enable us to become a refining host for our students." This inspired linkage between research and student learning does away with the seemingly irreconcilable dichotomy between the two. Research is to be an endeavor, quote, among both faculty and students, close quote, as our mission statement plainly declares. And its primary aim is student development, a distinctive, if not unique, primary aim for universities that value faculty research so highly. This type of refining learning and development can best occur when the research is cutting edge, at the frontiers of knowledge. There's a difference between being in a lab conducting routine experiments with predictable results designed to help students see in action principles they have learned in the classroom, something which many of us have experienced in high school, and being part of a team that is seeking a hitherto unknown solution to a pressing problem with real-life implications, such as the discovery of a cure for Alzheimer's disease or the development of a lightweight but impenetrable bulletproof shield. Both inspiring learning experiences in which our students have been involved, as the video showed. As enlightening and instructive as it is to be in a chemistry lab recreating experiments that have already been done, it pales in comparison to the intellectually stimulating, sweat-inducing, spiritually stretching experience of being involved in making a truly new discovery. Discoveries that may require and produce revelation about both the matter being studied and the individuals performing the study. Thus, as our mission statement makes clear, this is a place, quote, where a commitment to excellence is expected, close quote, including with respect to faculty research. And it is also a place where, quote, the full realization of human potential of our students is pursued. First-class research, whose focus is on student development, achieves both these aims. This uniquely student-focused approach to world-class research is at the heart of our current emphasis on inspiring learning. Faculty-mentored student research on cutting-edge topics is one of the primary focuses of that initiative, an initiative whose aim is clearly and exclusively on student learning. It produces a unique kind of student learning that in some instances can happen only at a place like BYU, where the most important end result is not discovery of new knowledge or faculty development, but student revelation through research. I believe this unique combination of faith-based teaching and student-centered research is a key ingredient to the kind of holistic learning and character development that President Kimball called education for eternity, the kind of student learning and character development that is at the heart of our prophetically declared destiny. However, this lofty view of our potential should not obscure the reality that such an endeavor is not easy. We are in the messy middle on these two key issues, and that position is sometimes precarious and almost always difficult and soul-stretching. Elder Oaks identified some ever-present challenges that this unique combination of faith-based teaching and student-centered research brings with it. Let me discuss three of them and commend to you a reading of Elder Oaks' entire talk for an understanding of the others he identified. First, combining faithfulness with learning and research with teaching requires a lot of extra effort. Our commitment to faith-based teaching requires, as President Kimball observed, that every professor and teacher in this institution keep his or her subject bathed in the light and color of the restored gospel, and have all of his or her subject matter perfumed lightly with the spirit of the gospel. That is not an easy task. It requires a thorough understanding of not only our disciplines, but also of the scriptures. It requires that we be worthy of the companionship of the Holy Ghost, because revelation to our students in the classroom often requires revelation to a faculty member in class preparation. And revelation does not come cheap. As President Kimball observed, perspiration must precede inspiration. Similarly, it is not always easy to keep the focus of research on student learning. Faculty members must be passionate enough about both discovery and their discipline to produce the energy needed to sustain their research through its inevitably difficult stages when no answers seem to be available. But at the same time, they must not become so overzealous to make a new discovery that students become mere instruments in the process rather than the desired end. Again, maintaining this balance requires extra effort. Furthermore, as Elder Oaks noted, there is in these matters a challenge for the administration. We need to properly recognize and incentivize both faith-based teaching and student-centered research, something that is quite difficult. It's easy to count the number of publications that research produces. It is much more difficult, but more important, to evaluate how much impact the research endeavor has on the students. Thus, achieving our goal in the unique way we desire will require ongoing, constant, extra effort on every level. A second ever-present challenge to maintaining both our faithfulness in teaching and our student-oriented focus in the research is the reality that neither of these things is likely to bring us much of the praise of the world. And for most of us, including me, the allure of that praise is ever-present and ever-powerful. Moreover, when we mark ourselves as unique, we can easily become arrogant. Thus, we must constantly guard against the pitfall of pride. In his classic 1989 General Conference address, President Ezra Taft Benson reminded us that pride is a damning sin in the true sense of that word. It limits or stops progression. That is true of individuals, and it is true of institutions, including this university. Pride can become the great stumbling block. Pride is not always easy to discern, as it is an internal attitude that does not always manifest itself externally. As President Benson observed, our motives for the things we do are where the sin of pride is manifest. Therefore, one key to our success will be having the right motivation. If we are motivated solely by pride, we will fail. So what should motivate us? President Benson noted that the essence of pride is enmity, enmity toward God and enmity toward our fellow man. If the essence of pride is enmity or hatred toward our fellow man, the antidote to pride would seem to be the opposite of enmity, which is charity, or perfect love for our fellow beings. Thus, we will fully achieve our goal only if we are motivated more by charity than by pride, more by a desire to help our students than by a desire to compare favorably with our peers. The difficulty is that, as noted, motivation cannot easily be measured, at least not by other human beings. Only we and God know what truly motivates us. Moreover, the temptation to gratify our vain ambition is so constant that we will likely never reach the point at which we can say that we are sufficiently humble and charitable that we need not worry about those issues anymore. Thus, self-inspection that is sincere enough to produce personal revelation from God is required, and it is required daily. It's not unlike the observation of Thomas Schaefer, who in an excellent book-length analysis of whether it is possible to be a Christian and a lawyer, concluded that the complexities of law and life are so great and the temptation to deviate from Christian values while practicing law are so constant that the answer to that question must always remain contingent. Said he, "I often think that the only way to be both a Christian and a lawyer is to ask every day, is it possible to be both a Christian and a lawyer, and to be open every day to the thought that it might not be." Similarly, perhaps the only way we can remain sufficiently humble and charitable is to ask ourselves every day the question, am I sufficiently humble and charitable? And to be open every day to the thought that we may not be. Third, as Elder Oaks noted, To accomplish its mission, BYU must have all parts of its community united in pursuing it. Prophets have set forth an ambitious agenda for this university and those involved in it. It is not an easy agenda, and it will require all of us to change and to work together, not just in one department or in one college and not just among the faculty. We will need everyone on this campus to be committed to the task because we are in the messy middle, and all of us from time to time will need reminders that it is in the messy middle that magic, no miracles, happen. As noted, none of this will be easy, but it will be enlivening, exhilarating, and yes, ethereal. At times, we will need to forge new paths. That's what uniqueness is all about. But the impact will be larger than we may think. Let me illustrate with one final example. 6 years ago, a group of engineering students engaged in a capstone project involving the creation of a water well drill to help people in Tanzania obtain an ongoing source of clean water. Lack of clean water is a major cause of disease and poverty in many countries, including several in Africa. The project began when John Renard, a BYU alum who majored in finance, traveled to Africa with his family. John was profoundly moved by the plight of those who did not have access to clean water, and he formed an organization called WHO Lives. WHO, W-H-O, standing for Water, Health, and Opportunity. Through a series of events I'll describe after the video we're about to see, he connected with the College of Engineering and a group of students working with their faculty mentor. And they set out to address the problem. All they knew was that they needed to have a drill that was human-powered, could be easily transported from village to village without large trucks, and could drill down hundreds of feet through different kinds of material. They were undergraduates doing research with profound real-life consequence under the tutelage of a faculty mentor. Here is their story.
11% of the world's population does not have access to clean water.
A lot of people think that there's not a lot of water in Africa, but in reality, there's plenty of water, but it's 30, 40, 50 meters below the ground, and so getting to it is the problem.
The Village Drill was a capstone project. The directive from WhoLives.org was make a machine that will get access to water 250 feet below the surface using primarily human power. There were a number of people who thought it would be impossible.
When we first got the assignment, I had never worked on drills before, and so that was kind of daunting.
The fact that we were all inexperienced was a blessing, so we could think out of the box. So it started with a drill bit attached to a metal rod. The next was a wooden structure that we took and drilled back behind one of the engineering buildings.
We only got, you know, maybe 6 inches into the ground, went back to the drawing board.
We then drilled a couple feet over near Kiwanis Park. We drilled a hole in our professor's backyard.
As the development process often is, you learn more and more, little by little. You end up with something pretty successful, and then that's what happened to the Village Drill.
So the final device is a cantilever beam structure.
This is our human-powered drill.
The yellow wheel acts like a flywheel, which means that once you get it going, it wants to keep going.
Through just a lot of hard work and quite frankly, inspiration, they came up with the Village Drill, and there's just nothing like it in the world.
Arriving in Tanzania, it was immediately apparent the need for our project.
People had to walk 7 miles to get water.
Anytime we were operating the drill, there was a crowd around, and they understood what we were doing, and they were excited for it.
We'd been drilling at the site for 4 days. It was hot. We went to disconnect a pipe, and we had water coming out of the pipe.
It was a little celebration.
That's it!
Everyone was giving high fives and cheering.
It was a great feeling. It was like, man, we've done it. There's something special here.
The Village Drill design is simple. It's straightforward. It's a fraction of the cost.
It far surpasses any manual drill, and in a lot of respects, even the huge motorized drills. We tested the drill in Africa, and we had phenomenal success. And what we're able to do is find out that this drill works everywhere. Here we are 5-6 years into development, and we're in 23 countries. They have drilled over 1,100 boreholes.
The Village Drill totally comes apart into pieces that can be carried by people or carried in a small truck.
We just got back from the Congo, where we literally had to put the village drill in a couple of canoes, and we paddled for 3 days up the river system.
When you got there, you know, they welcomed us, and, you know, they were so happy. We could see the joy in their eyes.
For every hour of engineering that was spent by the students, over 1,700 people months of water has been delivered. That's over 144 years for every hour of engineering spent by a BYU student. That's amazing. That's the kind of impact we want to have.
When I met these students, they were so sharp, and they were truly invested in what we were doing. It's not every day that you can work on a project that has the potential to change the world. And I hope that they never lose sight of what they did during those 7 months to develop the drill.
But to see that it's impacted hundreds of thousands of people's lives, I mean, it's really humbling and awe-inspiring.
We felt there was inspiration throughout the design process, and the fact that there were families in Africa that were waiting for this drill was a great motivation the whole time.
There might be a million people out there that are drinking clean water today because of the work that these engineers did at BYU 6 years ago. There's more at work here than just us. Open your mind up, open up to the possibilities, because these students did just that.
The last sentence of our mission statement states, "We believe the earnest pursuit of this institutional mission will greatly enlarge Brigham Young University's influence in a world we wish to improve." What we've just seen is Exhibit A. Hundreds of thousands of people in 23 countries have access to clean water because of the efforts of these undergraduate students. But of equal importance, maybe more importance, the lives of the students and others were also profoundly changed. One of the students, Ken Langley, went on to receive his master's degree in fluid dynamics and is currently working on his PhD at the King Abdullah University of Science and Technology in Saudi Arabia. He indicated that when he began studying engineering, he just wanted to work on airplanes. But being involved in this humanitarian project changed his career focus. It also changed his outlook. "Had I not gone to Tanzania as part of my capstone project," he said, "I would never have had the courage to make the step to go to Saudi Arabia where I am now. Going on that trip also gave me a desire to learn more about the world and to get to know more people in different parts of the world." Another student, Nathan Toon, who is now working as an engineer for Boeing in St. Louis, explained another profound way in which students were affected. "It was a spiritual experience," he said. "There was a lot of inspiration and prayers answered that allowed us to even get the drill to Tanzania. And once there, there were other little miracles where we'd meet the right person, or we'd just happen to find this drilling expert who showed us where we could find water and happened to make this connection over here with a farmer who had a field that we could drill. All these little things," he said, "appeared to be a coincidence, but we knew that they weren't, that there was something bigger going on that was helping our success." That this was a work of inspiration had been clear at the outset to John Renard, the BYU alum whose desire to bless the people of Africa was the genesis of the program. As I mentioned, John started his organization, Who Lives, shortly after traveling to Africa with his family and seeing the need for clean water. But he didn't know exactly what he needed to do at that point. He went online and saw a brick-making machine that, it turned out, had been developed in an engineering capstone project at BYU. With that in mind, he called the capstone office, was informed that the responsible person was out of town, and John left his number. John describes what happened next. He said, "A few weeks later, in the middle of the night, I had a dream. It was strong enough that it got me out of bed to my kitchen table to write down what I had seen. And intuitively, I knew that it was a drill. But I'm not a well driller," he said. I was a finance major, and I lived in Southern California. My water came from a tap. But I knew intuitively that what I'd seen was something that I needed to jot down. That was the first miracle." He then said the next one happened the very next day when I got a call from the BYU capstone program asking me if I had a program or a project they could work on. John then met with the faculty from the engineering program to explain the need that he saw in Africa, but he did not give them his specific drill ideas. As he put it, "One of the great concepts of capstone is that you don't go to the students and tell them, go build this and give them the schematics and everything. You tell them, this is what we want to do, now go and do it." After several months of work by the students, John received a text In John's words, the text said, "We sent you a CAD drawing. Can you go open it?" And I did. When I opened it, I saw that drill, and I recognized it from my dream. It was like, there it is. How did they do that? It was amazing. Inspiring learning, the kind of learning that can assist individuals for their quest for perfection and eternal life by helping them see the hand of the Lord operating in their lives. It is a unique kind of education that faith-based teaching and student-centered research can produce. I bear my witness that this university has a prophetically declared destiny. It is part of the rolling forth of the kingdom of God on earth. May each of us have the courage, vision, and faith needed to do those things that the Lord expects of us in moving this work along, is my prayer in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.